Now, I have a question for you, Aina. Is it better to have children earlier or later in life?
Well, that depends. There's a theory that says if you have your children later in life, you're exposing either whether it's children or yourself to early dementia and things like this. But the later you put it off, the better in one sense, because then you have your own youth. I had my third child when I was 41, so, and he's grand and he's having children himself now, and he's realising now when I used to say, what do you want for Christmas? Peace and quiet. He's now saying he wants peace and quiet himself. There's advantages for everything. The thing is to have a child that's well and healthy and that's, you know, able to live and be happy, and you adjust to the circumstances. If you have them at 18, 19, 20, well, you're young and you're able for it. If you have them at 39, 40, you're richer and you can give them a better life. So there's in some people, you don't have a choice in the matter. It's only nowadays we have. So I just for and against both.
For and against. Actually, I should really be asking this question in a roost full of bats. Let's say hello to Dr. Megan Power from UCD School of Biology and Environmental Science. Hello, Megan, how are you?
Hi, doing well. How are you?
So tell us about your research and why am I asking this question? Is it better to have babies early or later in life? And this has to do with bats and your study.
Yes. Yeah, so I spent a long time working on a really cool population, greater horseshoe bats in the UK, using a particular biomarker, telomeres. So what they are, if you think of shoelaces, they're like the caps at the end of your shoelaces, and they're often thought to be a marker of aging and stress. And as I started my study many years ago, we found that this variation seemed to occur across the reproductive season. And then we started to realise that these guys have really cool adaptive reproductive strategies that seem to be linked to their lifespan as well. So one of the kind of really cool findings was with long-lived species, they're actually quite adaptive when they first breed. So it's often thought that the later you leave breeding is that you're in better condition. You can give, birth better. You can have healthier pups. So pretty much, and this is what we see in the bats, is that those that start breeding earlier tend to have shorter telomeres. And then the shorter your telomeres are, it reduces your survival to the next year. While we have then bats in this population that breed later, they also even do an adaptive strategy of skipping years and living all the way up into their 20s, which is really unusual for a creature so small.
Does it actually shorten the telomeres? Or are these bats that have short telomeres anyway before they ever thought about reproducing? And if short telomeres mean that you don't live as long as ones with longer telomeres, well, then you'd be right to start breeding earlier, wouldn't you?
So this is the thing. We think it is quite an adaptive way of going forward. And we found that we had, in some cases, individuals born in the same year, one bred at 2, one bred at 3, and their rates of telomeres didn't actually change. So we start to think that perhaps it's a biomarker of your individual quality, that perhaps you're born, as you said, you can start breeding earlier just to kind of make sure that you contribute to the fitness of the population, and compared to those that perhaps are like, oh, I can actually leave it later, I can have another summer or two before they start having offspring.
Do the ones born earlier live, the chicks now, or the offspring, do they last longer, live longer than the ones that are born later? Is there an optimum time to be born from the point of view of the offspring?
Oh, absolutely. So these guys are really attuned to the weather. In particular, there's been a lot of work done on this population. So if it's a really bad spring, what can happen is if it's too cold, too wet, we find that pups are born later. So the optimum time, and particularly in this population, we actually can time it down to 2 weeks. So late June, early July is the most perfect time. But if spring is too bad, if they're born too early and they're born too late, so we have had years if they're born too late into August, they might not do as well as they head into hibernation. So they're very, as I said, it's nearly like the Goldilocks effect. And it has to be just right for the pup to be born.
So the mother's job is to predict when is the best time to do this kind of thing, and that must be a very complex thing.
Oh, absolutely, because with these bats, they also hibernate. So they actually mate before they hibernate. They, you know, reduce their body temperature, reduce their metabolic rates, carry on for 6 months, and then as they exit, that's when they have to time kind of is fertilization, gestation, and when exactly to give birth. So it's a very complex job of which we're still trying to understand. How do they know how to do this? How can they time it based on the weather, based on insect availability?
Does it correlate with the weight of the mother? In most things, the mother's weight is crucial, really. She's got to get up to the right weight before she starts. Now, the poor old bat is only one shot in the season. So it must be a very critical thing. But is the mother's weight important? Do heavy mothers do better reproductively than others?
We didn't really find that as a major effect. And bats, again, are quite unusual compared to other mammals, where they actually only have a limit of how much fat that they can prepare. So when we think of hibernation and reproduction, you know, we're talking about grams here. So typically an average greater horseshoe bat would be 22, 23. And then as they get pregnant, the heaviest they can be is 30, 31. And there can't be much variation. So doesn't necessarily seem that weight is too much of a priority here, as often you'll see with the bats, there's variation in size, and for these guys it doesn't seem to be as important, but in a lot of other creatures it is very important that the bigger, the healthier the mother, the better the offspring.
Megan, I wanted to just follow up on that. I mean, Richard was saying, does it matter if the baby is born when the mother is 2 years of age or when the mother has her first offspring when she's 3 or 4 years of age? Does the baby born to a two-year-old mother live longer than a baby born, or live not as long as a baby born first to a mother who starts off at 3 or 4 years of age? Is there a difference in the quality of the offspring? Never mind what time of year they're born at, but the actual lifespan of the offspring, one at a younger mother, one with an older mother starting off, is there any difference there, or has that been measured?
We haven't measured directly in regards to this. However, with early life, it's a bit more complicated. So it's the most riskiest time for juvenile bats. So we have in another study where we've measured telomeres. In other species, early life telomeres are predicted to be a long-term predictor of survival and performance. But we found that they break the rules in bats. They just are trying to get through their first hibernation. So we actually found that as we tracked individuals, because they can gain telomeres in their first winter, ultimately what telomere length they're born with is not as important for survival as they're able to recuperate that time. So far we haven't seen necessarily a cost to the juveniles compared to the mothers, but it is something that we are investigating.
Megan, do you know if the telomere length in the females has any influence on mate choice in terms of the males that they mate with? Is that a consideration?
So we haven't looked at telomeres per se in regards to that. However, what's quite unusual and other metrics that we've collected in this colony is mate fidelity. So this is a really, we've tracked this population by Dr. Roger Ransom for a long time. So we do know that the same females will go back to the same males. So we actually have the case in comparison to other species of full siblings. So there does appear to be, mothers tend to go for, males are actually the smaller sex in this species, so females tend to go for the bigger males and actually will revisit the same male year after year. But males are a bit more difficult. Females return to the same roost year after year. Males disperse after 2 years and they have their own mating site, so it's a bit harder to track them.
Telomeres, amongst other things, they're biomarkers of stress. What are the main stresses for a female bat, and when are the most stressful times of their reproductive lives?
So pretty much lactation would be the biggest thing. So we do see that they kind of, when they have their first pregnant, they start off with their gestation. But then as the pup is born and as they're rearing the pup will be with them for the first 28 days of life, up until when they start to fly and forage for themselves. And we found that lactation is actually really the most stressful point. For insectivore bats, their diet is often thought to be calcium deficient. And so in order to ensure that they have enough calcium in their milk to supply for the pups, they actually nearly leech it off their skeleton. So they're trying to then feed their pup, make it healthy. So that's why it's very, very critical time point for bats is lactation. And the most stressful time would be when they're mid-lactation.
Megan, these are very large bats. Now, that seems to dictate a different lifestyle. I'm thinking of things like swallows and swifts, which trawl for insects. And the small bats probably do that. Contrast that with something like a merlin, which is a bird of prey, and it singles out one dundun in a flock and pursues it to the death kind of thing. Now, this large bat must be oriented towards large things, bees and wasps and butterflies and moths and things of this kind, and therefore it is the life cycles of these things that should dictate when they start breeding, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. So we know with the population, these guys really love beetles in particular, and one particular species of beetles, and when there's any type of asynchrony in the weather. This can also then affect them, the mothers and the pups. So they really want to keep with this food source. And so when, as I said, the spring is really important because that also dictates their feeding. Because when a pregnant bat goes out to feed, I think she can consume between 25 to 30% of her body weight in insects in one night. So ideally they want the most nutritious, the food source that they prefer. They can move down to kind of moths and tipulas, but they definitely prefer to have the beetles. And if any type of asynchrony occurs with this food source, that can also affect them as well.
These are flying beetles, are they?
I believe they are, yes. And as I said, in particular, they like in Woodchester Mansion, where these bat population is, they like to keep a group of cows there to encourage and to make sure that the right species of beetle stays, because obviously they're quite attracted to cow dung. And so the kind of this cooperation with the lands around to ensure that the cows are there, to ensure that we get the correct food source, hopefully with the bats there.
Yeah, Woodchester Mansion is in Gloucestershire. We had one record once of a great horseshoe bat in Ireland. We have the lesser horseshoe bat, obviously. We're one of the international headquarters for that over in the Burren Caves and in the west of Ireland. But this greater horseshoe bat was discovered in a cellar in County Wexford some years ago, just one. And I don't think they ever recorded any other one here in Ireland. I mean, is there any reason why we wouldn't have greater horseshoe bats in Ireland? If we had one, surely more could make the journey across too.
Yeah, and a lot of people have thought because they can travel great distances, but it does seem that in particular where they are, if there's colonies in France and in the UK, they're really, as I said, natal to their maternity roost. So they don't like to stray too far, particularly females. Even with males, they will travel some distances, but it seems to have been just that one vagrant species that seemed to individual that came over. And it just seems that they like where they live, where they're living. They don't want to travel too far away from home to reach Ireland. So as I said, we've only ever had the one recorded.
And that was a male, actually. That was a male in actual fact. It's been a very warm winter this year. Were the bats late going into hibernation? Are they fully hibernating? Will they wake up in warm days? What's the story generally on bats in hibernation? Or once they go into hibernation, is that it then? They're switched off for the winter?
No, so actually in Europe, what we find is, and particularly as you move kind of down in latitude, is they will actually wake when we have these warm, mild winters. So typically with this, just going from this population that I work on, we know that any time temperature hits above 10 to 12 degrees, the guys wake up, they will fly, they will feed, they will have water, and they can stay awake up to 12 days at a time. And then once temperatures drop back down, they'll go back into what we call torpor. So kind of, you know, a mini version of hibernation. And so they're very attuned to the environment. So they will, if they can, try to reduce their time in hibernation as well to get some food and then to go back into hibernation.
Do they ever skip years? I'm thinking of red deer. When the mothers get older, they often skip a year. That means they're much stronger after 2 years and the youngster they have is much stronger. And if it's a male, it will be a bigger male and it's more likely to become a dominant stag. Is there any mechanism like that by which a bat can start skipping a year and get much stronger offspring the following year as a result? Is that an option?
Absolutely, and we do see it in this population. So I'm thinking of an example of a 19-year-old that we currently have. She's skipped about 3 years in total over a reproductive lifespan. And it seems to be a mechanism in which they're prioritising themselves to make sure that they survive to the next reproductive summer. And what we often find is that they actually have daughters the next year. Because males are smaller, it seems that they would preferentially prefer having a female offspring who'll contribute to the roost and come back to the colony. We see that when they often skip years, they're trying to have a stronger female pup the next year.
So in a nutshell, is it good to have babies early or leave them till later?
Depends. It does depend. As Aina said, sometimes it might benefit to kind of get it done quickly. Other times we see that it's better that it prioritises the mother. She's then able to have kind of more healthier, bigger pups down the line. So it's a mixed bag and definitely different strategies for different bats.
Megan, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you so much.